grow up, why the old stuff doesn't look quite so interesting. But it's interesting to me because I came from the city to Le Grand, and every outdoor thing was available in 5 minutes. And I thought, oh, I'm in heaven. You know, I couldn't be any closer to heaven than I am, just because I had always been a tomboy and loved to hike and took horseback riding lessons. And so, but I had to write English in Portland. I belonged to two different hunt clubs. But that paid off, because when I came up here and Jean Burney gave me a test, I could go up a hill without falling off the horse. And so she let me go on this wonderful ride. But that developed over the years, because when I first came, I was 21 years old. I married a man who was 32 years old. And of course, I thought that I knew as much as he did, because you do at 21, you know. And it wasn't until I raised some children and went back to school that I found out how little I know. Even after we went around the world one time, I came back saying, oh boy, I just have so much to learn still. And then I decided to get a teacher certificate. And so at the end of the time, well, are you prepared to teach? I said, I'm prepared to learn something more. And so, but much of my wisdom came from a lady by the name of Jean Burney. This is another picture of that same one. This was the famous group.
This might have been the same day, too, huh?
That's the one yes, I think it is.
Is this Jean on the end here?
Jean's on the other end.
Over here?
Uh-huh. Okay. And just to set the scene, because I think everything about my outdoor life in Le Grand has been woven through Jean Burney. She was a contemporary of my mother-in-law. Because my husband was older, my mother-in-law was older too, see. So she was in her 60s, and I thought that was old, because at 21 you think 60 is old. And you no doubt think that I might be old, because I'm 84. And it's an ancient age, only felt once in a while. But I do feel once in a while. I met Jean Burney, and she immediately asked me if I'd like to go for a horseback trip around the hillside. And that was great. But when I was asked to go on the coveted trip to the high mountain country, that was the real test, you know. If I could go up hills around here, they figured I could go in the high mountains. And so there was another girl, Doug's wife's mother, who was my same age, and we went together. Her name was Marty Reese. I think I should show you a picture of Jean Burney, and you can tell what a lovely woman she was just by this picture. It is absolutely gorgeous. And when I was looking these things up, I realized that the people who had written these articles were much better, more concise in their language, and that I should read probably some of them. But to start out, it all happened so easily. And about the first four trips that I took on horseback into the mountains, I didn't know where I was. I would just say, well, you know, that place where we had corn on the cob for lunch, or that place where we had biscuits and jam and that sort of thing. They would know where that was, and that was great. I also wanted to emphasize that back in 1940, we were still in the Depression. And you know, I'm sure that all of your studies have led you through a little taste of the Depression, but you couldn't taste the Depression very well until you lived it. And I'm sure you're never going to have to, because the affluent society is so well embedded into our spirit, you know, that we can't get over it. But life was much more simple. there were no paved roads in this end of town. It was all graveled roads. And after we went into the Army for World War II and were back, we couldn't go forward very much because even after the war was over, there was not very much available to build a house with or that sort of thing, and that's what we wanted to do. Because when we came home, we had two children, and we had bought a piece of property. That was lucky, but we had to buy a we had to build a house, and so we were lucky to get the house built. But it took us 5 years after we were home to get that done. In the meantime, I was having all this fun with Jean Burney, and I wanted to tell you, my husband happened to be an outdoor man too, and had spent a lot of his life fishing with his father. His father was a dentist here, and their family went on lots of camping trips and lots of fishing trips. He didn't happen to be a fisherman, but then he enjoyed other things about the outdoors. And so when I moved into the family, I learned how to do things the Brownton way. Well, keep in mind that there was no women's lib in those days. You were supposed to do what your husband wanted you to do and the way he wanted you to do it. So, much to his surprise, after I went out on a horseback trip with Jean Burney, then I was telling him how to do things. I soon found that didn't work. I know, he says, Jean Burney has been doing things for a long time, but this is the way I do. So, we had to kind of back up and change our minds. But as you see this picture with the horses and everything, you can see that the ladies were very informal, except that I think it's very significant that they have ties on. Now, in the group that I went on, we never wore ties, but this was a few years before that. And so maybe they just did it to pose for the before the picture. I never did ask them about that. I'm the only one left who went on these trips, and was lucky that I was young enough, you know, to keep on living in, and so that I could relate it to people who come along. But the basic equipment was a saddle, a saddle blanket, and we didn't have fancy equipment. You probably are well acquainted with some of the old equipment that we had. Do you still have all your harness in the barn and everything?
Barn, yeah, we have them all there.
Yeah, because the Smootses have been involved with even large wagons of workhorses and teams, you know. They always had a Smoots team for parades and things, and even work. Because in those days they plowed with horses. Well, anyway, I just brought an example of what an alforcus looks like. But if you went to look for one these days, you'd never find one that was well used like this. And this has a can be cooked in the oh, I see a mouse has been in here too. But anyway, this is a thing that fits over the horse and the person, you know, a poncho, because no matter how safe you thought it was to go in the middle of the summer, it always rained. You always had all kinds of weather. This is a pack saddle, and you put one of these alforcas on either side. You hang it over here and the other one over there. And this little pad is next to the horse. And Jean really prided herself on doing the diamond hitch, because after you got these alforcas hung on here, you would pile your shovel and your fishing poles and your whatever else you needed for equipment, and then blankets and tents or anything else that we wanted to take. It was pretty simple. We usually took a just a canvas to put up between two trees, and we never bothered with a tent because we all like to sleep out under the stars. And but the equipment is always an amazing thing, because nowadays even I would not recommend anybody starting out on a horse in their family, you know, without a trailer. Well, we didn't have a trailer. None of our horses knew how to get into a trailer. That's the first thing you do with horses now, is teach them how to get into a trailer. It makes it a lot easier. But on several of our trips, we rode across the valley. The first day was riding across the valley. Then we'd leave the horses in cold at the Hancock's, which was the last place on Moss Springs Road.
Oh, on the left there?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And the old barn, I think maybe is still there, but mm-hmm. the old house is gone. The Hancock who lives there now is not a horseback rider, but he's a very nice fellow.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, then the next day we would get started. Long before we'd start on this wonderful trip, we would have met in Jean Burney's backyard, and her house was where Dr. McMahon's dental office is now. And it went clear through to the other road. She had a barn there where she kept some of her horses. And the other part of her farm was up Glass Hill Road, where the houses now have a place. And we would plan the food, because when you're going into the high mountains where there is nothing, no place to buy anything for 10 days, you have to be pretty well. And she believed in taking plenty of vegetables, and we would take meat for the first couple of days because it would be safe. And but we took plenty of vegetables and very few canned goods. You talk to anybody who goes camping these days, and they have all kinds of perks. First, they have their fancy horse equipment, and they have to park it someplace, and start off with everything, you know, clean pans and stoves and tents that have stoves in them and everything. I'm always amazed at how much stuff these hunters will put into a hunting trip, you know, when you can survive without all that stuff. Then when you had all of that available, then you had to be sure that all of your tack was in good shape, all your harness and your horse that you were responsible for was put together. You couldn't allow yourself to lose any little piece of leather, because that would be needed, and there was no way to get any new. Rarely did we run into anybody. Once in a while, we would run into backpackers that had that were fishing, and they would give us some fish. But we had a couple of ladies who would fish too. But these stalwart ladies were able to wrangle horses, tie the diamond hitch. We would actually practice on that before we'd go. And before my husband died, we had him show us how to tie a diamond hitch on a video, so we have that forever, you know. It's a little tedious to watch, but it's a wonderful a wonderful memory for us to have, to know how to do the diamond hitch. I just thought that I might read this one little article, and then maybe more, because I was impressed with the way these things were written myself. This is 51. 10 women returned from Le Grand Tuesday from a horseback trip into the Whitman and Wallala forests. We would never say that now. We'd say Wallala Whitman. But an outing taken nearly every year by the same women for the past 25 years. Unassisted, the women with 14 horses and Kim the dog packed up their own equipment and traveled more than 130 miles, stopping at Tombstone Lake, Diamond Lake, Minum Lake, and Blue Lake. Many of the trails were uncleared and hazardous, sometimes to the point that the horsewomen found it necessary to dismount and let their horses feel their way across the dangerous spots. The group traveled approximately 15 miles a day. And we decided that we wanted to see as much of the mountains as we could, so we didn't stay in camp because we weren't necessarily interested in fishing. So several colored pictures were taken during the trip. Were Mrs. George Burney, Mrs. Albert Epling, Mrs. Thomas McGuire, Mrs. Clyde Seitz, Mrs. Wesley Broughton, Mrs. Clarence Gilstrap, Mrs. Ralph Badgley, and from Portland, Mrs. Kenneth Williamson, Mrs. Dan Reese, and Mrs. Lloyd Hassel. Mrs. Dan Reese is Marty Reese, and Jean Hassel, they were sisters, and they were the kind of the foster children of Jean Burney because they belonged to her best friend, and her best friend died of a burst appendix. So when these kids were young, why Jean took them on. Is that a picture of
Grace?
Of Grace. Yeah. This is her friend who died. And whenever we would think about it, we'd be mad at the doctor. But then, you know, they didn't have penicillin in those days. And people weren't aware of their bodies as we are now. So we have to make a lot of excuses for the doctors in the old days. But she was a lovely lady. I never did know her because she was gone when I came.
Isn't that amazing how much she looks like Melissa?
She's Melissa's grandmother?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Melissa's my wife.
Those look just like Melissa.
They're just nearly identical.
Yeah. That is really neat. And this Mrs. Ralph Badgley was the Badgley of Badgley Hall. And she was the most intelligent woman. She was a scientist in her own right. And so precise and elegant in her speech. And really kept us on our toes culturally and, educationally. So we enjoyed Mrs. Badgley, her name was Esther, for many years because after Ralph died, she was around here for a long time. And she always kept us up on the latest events. And this is one that was written about her when she died. And it says, her spirit will remain always singing in the ponderosas. Jean Burney passed away last week. Everyone who knew her will feel the loss, for you could not meet Jean Burney without being profoundly affected by her. At 88, age had taken what it could, but still beauty shone forth. Certainly spiritual beauty, but also a physical beauty. If we must live in our God-given face until 50 and after, that with the one we have created, then Jean certainly created for herself a beautiful face out of a beautiful life. A quick mind, unfailing sense of humor, shining eyes made her simply sparkle with vivacity. Jean's greatest loves were the mountains, the forests, and the streams. In the spring, she was the first in search of a buttercup. She loved all living things, domestic and wild, especially her dogs and horses. During World War II, when the men were away, she organized a hen party into the mountains. Of course, this was before wilderness classifications, printed maps, and lightweight, efficient camping gear. But Jean and her friends could not let the summer go by without a trek through the mountains. Her deep love and respect for nature has been passed on to those whose lives she touched. At 85, she thought her mountain days were through, but when the opportunity to fly into the mountain in a light airplane came along, she was aboard, for that turned out to be her last trip into her beloved country. She had a way of defying tragedy by making the best of the worst, and when her best friend died, leaving behind her small children, she guided their lives and their children. And their children called her grandmother. Much later, when Jean lost her hearing, she did not lose her sense of humor. She delighted in telling of crazy mix-ups which occurred through her misinterpretations. Jean, who loved the howling of coyotes and the singing of birds equally, who preferred chopping wood to embroidery, wood cook stoves to gas or electric ones. The simple life, over anything complex, was buried Monday in a simple pine box, her body wrapped in an old Indian blanket. But her spirit will remain, always singing in the ponderosas, sparkling in the mountain streams, smiling in a wildflower, dancing in the blue sky.
That's really nice, isn't it?
Isn't that great? I just didn't think I could improve on that at all, so I had to read that to you. Now, this article is something about my interest in the Oregon Trail, but it ties in with Jean and her explorations around the valley here, because we climbed up every hill and went over every mountain, and she was interested in the Oregon Trail, which, of course, is found very easily along B Avenue and up at the end of B, if you kind of go up and behind the mountain, behind Table Mountain, and then up and over. So on all summer, we would ride horseback every Thursday and stay out all day. And otherwise, in the wintertime, we hiked. And every time, we'd build a fire, make lunch, sit around, and philosophize, because that's the way we like to do it. And that's why I learned so much from Jean Burney, because you don't learn if you're just busy doing something else, you know. You just sit down. You learn about the wood that burns the best. You learn how to cook outdoors. You learn the books that she read, and on, you know. It was just great. But she does say here, Broughton said she and other hikers learned to fend for themselves on the trail. The hikers would cook from scratch, using coals and bringing no prepared foods. They would also take care of the horses at night. That was on the hen party. We did it all on our own. Broughton hiked with Burney for 25 years. Broughton still hikes today. This was written in 87. And I still hike today. In fact, I went over the Oregon Trail to Hillgard in June. Sometimes bringing people along the 8-mile stretch of Oregon Trail starting on B Avenue and ending at Hillgard Park. Broughton said she likes to hike the trail because it brings back memories of Burney and how she taught hikers the lay of the land and the flowers on the trail. Broughton remembers sitting around the fire cooking and philosophizing about things. The women who went on hikes with Burney were well-educated ladies who wanted to be a part of the outdoors. All these women could hold their own in a deep conversation. Broughton has taken people all ages along the Oregon Trail for the last 10 years. She said, sometimes organizing the tours is not easy. First, she had to get permission from property owners who own the land where the trail goes through. Of course, smoking is not allowed on the properties. She doesn't recommend taking dogs or children under 8. But for the most part, her love of hiking keeps her going, and she likes to point out these things about the trail that make the history of the pioneer travel so rich. Like the spring along Foothill Road, you know, where the mass of trees is and the curve at the end of the Foothill Road, that is where the spring is, and that's one place where the pioneers on the Oregon Trail would stop and refill their wagons. Then they'd move up to the end of B Avenue and get more water at that spring, and then they'd start over the hill. And but that's another story we're trying to keep on the hen party story. Was the main source of water for early travelers. Above all, Broughton stresses the spirit of the pioneers. It took a certain breed of people to pick up and go on no matter what happened, no matter who died. Of course, times have changed since those days, since the days that Broughton was hiking with Burney. Nobody had fancy hiking clothes at that time, only practical clothes that kept a person warm. But the fancy clothes won't stop Broughton from hiking the familiar hills she's been on a good portion of her life. I'm never going to give it up if I don't have to. But there was something else here. When Broughton first moved to La Grande in 1940 at the age of 21, she met Jean Burney, wife of the late George S. Burney, active member of the Lions Club, who deeded the property for Burney Park. Burney was not only known because of her connection with her husband, but also for her hikes. She was a great outdoors lady. Anytime you'd go any place with Jean Burney, it was memorable. Burney organized week-long trips along the Oregon Trail, and the group was a select one. Only women were allowed to come. It was during these trips that Brown became acquainted with the trail. Long before Boise Cascade or the Oregon Highway Division or the Oregon-California Trails Association started marking the trail, the other women decided to preserve landmarks themselves. About 34 years ago, these women placed rock cairns along the trail. Brown said she and other hikers learned to fend for themselves. I have to tell you that where I have found one cairn up there on the top of the hill, when the GPS, is that what it's called, person came along and pinpointed where the trail was, it was right on that cairn. Now, don't ask me how Jean Burney knew that, except that the rest of the trail, the ruts went down, and there was a tree that had grown between the ruts. So she was pretty sure that that had to be the exact pace. So whenever I take anybody on this trip, I say, this is the most memorable cairn and the only one we can find, actually. So, but it's pretty neat. If you know, I don't know how much you want to go into when you do a oral history, but this tells about Jean Burney and George Burney getting married, and this one tells about George Burney dying. And George was an exceptional person. He came to this country on a cattle boat when he was a youngster and worked his way out to the West. He became an optometrist and a juror. And when he had a heart attack, the doctor said, "Well, I don't want you to plan to chop any more wood." And he said, "Life isn't worth living if I can't chop wood." So he went on chopping wood, and he died. So let that be a lesson to you. Rarely do we have to chop wood anymore. Although I'm having to work harder than I meant to work when I was 84.
Really?
I do. I am. I still have this big place, and nobody else wants to do the work. So I just work harder than I should. No, not harder than I should, but harder than I meant to. Jean's maiden name was McDonald, and Hattie McDonald lived next door to them. The little house that was just burned a couple of weeks ago was where Hattie McDonald lived. And when we'd go out on Thursday, she'd come over, and she was about 85 at one time. She lived to be 94. She'd come over and she'd say, "Oh, Jean, I just wanted to tell you goodbye because I might not be here when you get back, and I just hope that you have a good time." And we always said we thought probably she'd outlive Jean because she didn't do anything. But she was the one who told us that George and Jean met on horseback. They had their romance on horseback. They got married on horseback, and their honeymoon was on horseback. And they'd been on horseback ever since. So,
did they have any children?
They had one child who had a crippled foot. And I don't know too much about it because he had died before I came. But you know, Jean was 60 by the time I came, so a lot of these things had happened to her before, and that's why that one article said something about the hardships of life. You know, you lose a child, and in those days it was fairly common to lose a child. My mother-in-law had lost a child, and for the longest time I couldn't understand why this child who had been gone for 75 years was still memorialized, you know, You have to get old before you can understand things like that. But understanding does come with age. Now, are there any questions you'd want to ask?
Oh, I think we have a bunch of questions. Can I ask the first one?
Sure.
I have these books that I think relate to the trip, although it's not just the hymn party. Is it okay if I pass those around
sure.
while we're
oh,
talking?
Sure.
This is a family heirloom that's sort of coming apart at the seams, literally. So try to be careful about how you handle them. I think there may be a photograph of Jean Burney
in at least one of these two.
No, I had a lady say to me, isn't Jean an interesting woman? And I'd say, yeah, I just really love Jean. I've never seen a woman with more wrinkles. And, you know, that was the first time I realized that she had wrinkles. Mm. To me, she was just as young and beautiful as anybody could be, because she was. She just shone out. Her personality was just absolutely fabulous. And she made huckleberry dumplings, which is what I like to make. And she made biscuits on this little contraption over here. That's the way, because you can carry that pan in a saddlebag. So even on a day trip, you know, you can put this in the saddlebag. And, you know, there wasn't even aluminum foil or plastic sacks or things like that in the days when we went in the 40s. It's hard to remember that there wasn't hardly anything. Go ahead, ask a question.
How did the trips begin, as far as you can remember?
Well, I am sure that, you see, she spent her honeymoon wandering around the mountain, and she thought, I think we could do that. And then everybody who had horses in those days, and in those days, almost everybody had a cow, too. You know, it's unbelievable to think that there was a cow that people, ordinary people, like my husband was a lawyer. He milked a cow for 20 years. And the college professors milked cows. It was just the common thing. Well, we all had horses. So why not go for a ride together? And then, why not eat lunch out while we're there? You know, why hurry back to eat lunch? So we have been all over these hills. And over in the Rock Creek country and every place, you know.
This is an assumption on my part, so correct me if I'm wrong.
Okay.
I had imagined that it began as both men and women initially, and then during the war it became women. Is that true?
I think that's right. Okay. Definitely right. Because I'm sure this Grace and her husband no doubt went on rides with them, because mm-hmm. It was a common thing to go on a ride, and if you like camping, and there were no restrictions then, you know. A few years ago, we tried horseback camping in the wilderness area. It's very difficult when you're used to having a horse run free, even with hobbles, you know, and when you have to tie up a horse, take in your own food for the horse. The horse can't get anywhere near a lake. And, you know, there just is 1,000 regulations now. So it isn't as much fun as it was then. And there's more traffic up there now. When we went, we didn't see anybody else maybe for 10 days. And it was wonderful.
Did you, each year, did you take a different trail, or did you take the same trail?
Pretty much the same trail, but we could go when you get up to Moss Springs, and you can go over to Caffin Creek Meadows, or you can go down to the Minum. Mm-hmm. And so if you go over to Caffin Creek Meadows and go over that way, you get up on Meadow Mountain and Burger Butte and China Cap. You know, all those are on the maps now. But they didn't have good maps when we were there. It was just that she had made maps that we followed. And Yes, and even after we did hen parties, they still went on doing parties because Dr. Gilstrap liked to go. And in one of these articles, it tells about Neville Shute. You know who Neville Shute is? Neville Shute is the fellow who wrote On the Beach. He was an Australian writer.
Yeah, like a sort of post-apocalypse, and that one where they're kind of young people stranded on the beach.
Yeah.
The whole world sort of ended.
He wrote all kinds of books, but somehow or other, Dr. Gilstrap had written to him and said, just by reading your books, I kind of think that maybe you'd like to see our country. And sure enough, he came and visited, and they took him on a trip in the high mountains. And that was just a big eye-opener for them. I didn't get invited on that. But Dan and Marty, of course, went on a lot of these trips, and Dr. Gilstrap and Ralph and Esther Badgley and, you know, a lot of people who liked outdoor adventure, you know. And it was adventure because it was hard work, and but it didn't seem like it, you know. When you're 20 or 30, you can do almost anything. We called ourselves the Antique Girl Scouts. Did I make that clear? That was the basis of the hen party. And I was talking to a lady who's 94, 90, 95, same age as Wes would have been. And she said, I don't think you can tell them how it was during the Depression and in the simple times. And I said, well, I'm going to try. And if they listen, well, they'll learn something, maybe. Do you have a question? No question.
Can you kind of take us through a day?
Oh, I'd love to.
On the trail?
I'd love to.
Well, I mean, when a typical day in the hen party trip.
Okay.
What was like? What did you do first, and so on?
Okay. Now, when we would make camp, you know, we would first take all the saddlebags and the saddles and everything off of the horses and get them ready for the night, and get the horses ready. And we could let the horses go with hobbles. Do you know what hobbles are? Hobbles are two leather things that are tied together with a chain, and you put them on the front feet of a horse. And the horse can jump like this with them, but it allows them to eat without running away or being tied up. So it's amazing. There are lots of tales about what horses have done with hobbles on. But you don't even see a hobble anymore because of all these rules and regulations. Nobody needs a hobble, but that was common equipment. Every horse had a hobble. Okay, we would see that they were taken care of first, unpack everything, put the hobbles on, let them go. Then we would make camp, and each one would fix their own bed because it was a good idea to do it while it was light. And then you could even cook in the dark as far as that goes. But the food was all in an alforjas like this, and it was fairly well organized, like you would organize it in a cupboard so that you didn't have to go like this for everything. And the menus were already made out, so you knew what you were going to eat. And somebody would get busy making a salad, somebody would get busy making the biscuits, and somebody would get busy frying the meat or whatever main dish we were having. And somebody would go to the stream and get the water. And this is another thing about that time. Nobody ever worried about Girardia then. We always drank the water out of the streams. As long as it was running, it was okay. But you don't dare drink water out of any place anymore. Not any place. Or you will get sick. And having Girardia is no funny thing. It's makes you really sick. So that was a wonderful thing about that time. I don't know, maybe there weren't as many animals, but there surely weren't as many people. who were leaving germs around. So the onslaught of that. But we could just get water out of the stream. Because we were the only ones in the mountain, you could yell and it would echo. And you'd find a nice little glory hole and you could take a bath and nobody would care. You know, you usually did that in the morning, though. But you didn't do that at night because you needed to see what you were doing. We didn't carry along a Coleman lamp or a Coleman stove or anything. We all had flashlights and hope for the best. We would cook our dinner, eat our dinner. Somebody would be assigned to washing dishes because you would heat water on the fire. And somebody would have to gather wood and build the fire. And somebody would have to heat the water so that we could wash the dishes. So we always had soap and towels along to do that because cleanliness is next to holiness or something. And then we would sit around and philosophize or sing a song or whatever you do, you know.
What sort of stuff would you talk about when you were philosophizing?
Well, you know, religion is always a good thing. But nobody wanted to be too specific about their religion. Politics was also something, but it was a lot calmer than it is these days. You know, I have gone over the peak with politics. I'm on the downside now. I cannot stand it. And I'm a great decisions person. You know, if you've ever heard of the group called Great Decisions People. I just love to talk about politics and world affairs and one thing another, but it's just so disgusting now. Well, let's go on with this other. Life was simple then, and you could talk about simple things, and you could talk about what you'd known in your life before you got to this place. You know, you could tell about who you were and the other person's could tell about who they were, and then we could. There never seemed to be any lack of conversation, especially with people like Ralph. And this Edna Seitz was a funny person because she didn't have a sense of humor. So every time that we were jollying with each other, we had to say, Edna, this is a joke. It's really kind of hard to do, you know, but this is what we did. And then you'd snuggle down in your sleeping apparatus, and Jean Burney never would sleep in a sleeping bag. Sleeping bags had been invented, but of course they weren't the 40 degree below zero type. They were just, but she had a way of making a bed with folding a blanket over and then folding this blanket from here over and then this one from here over until she had her nice little nest to sleep in. But she didn't want to sleep in a sleeping bag. It was, you know, she could have been claustrophobic as far as that goes and not be wanting to be zipped up. So everybody has their own foibles, and you find that out pretty quick when you're on a trip like this. When you'd get up the next morning, why, you'd check the horses to see that they hadn't gotten completely out of hand. Maybe put their halters on and bring them back into camp. And then we'd have breakfast and pack up and be on our way for the next day. And this meant that you had to do the diamond hitch every time, you know. And then you had to keep your shovel out so you could get the fire out. It was a very simple life, and it didn't move fast. We weren't in a great big hurry, you know. So many people have 3 days to have a vacation, and they've got to get everything done in that shorter time, you know. But it's just wonderful. We would talk about the wildflowers and the trees, and the wonderful trees in the high mountains are so different from those in lowland. If you've never been in the high mountains, you don't know what a sticky pine tree is and what weather and environment does to flora. the survival of all the little people, little animals around, and the appreciation that you have for everything living, just like it said in that article. You know, it just came out in the conversation that we should be loving and kind to each other, and that life in the long run, you know, is all about getting to know each other and liking each other. So, getting back to the real world was always very difficult because we were kind of on cloud nine for these 10 days or so. One time we'd had a terrible rainstorm the night before we were coming out, and we didn't have time to get everything dry, but everything had been up drying in the fire, you know. Mm-hmm. So when Dr. Gilstrap met us out here a little ways, he said, "I can smell you a mile off."
Is it true that there was someone in the party that was sort of noted to be the poet?
That was Mima McGuire, and she has a book published, actually. Mima, M-I-M-A, McGuire, M-C-G-U-I-R-E. It's probably someplace on the internet. I don't know.
And then wasn't there also another woman who did a fair amount of painting?
And she was one of the ones that went with us.